All right, so we're recording now.
Right on, okay.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun. Mr. Alan Mott, thank you for letting me be here.
All right, thank you, Mr. Caspian Ray.
Luther.
Mr. Luther, appreciate you guys coming today. I've known you guys since junior high school. I mean, I remember shooting with you in the gym. I remember played in band. I mean, I didn't play much in band. I was a rebel, but...
I didn't stick around much longer after that.
Yeah.
No, I think you and Luther have known each other more so than we have, but I've gotten to know you best probably recently here on Facebook, seeing your posts, and I just thought we'd have some fun today.
Yeah, dude, it all started with reaching out to you about a telescope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been taking pictures of the stars recently, and... I feel very fortunate to be able to do that, and even in Fayetteville, you can get some really good photos with the equipment that's available now that's substantially cheaper than it has been, and so it's been fun, and it's a great opportunity, and I see you read Walking Patagonia. That's pretty awesome. I appreciate that. It was fun. It was for my son, so... he needed to know that he was a product of destiny, and I think it's all in there. I'm not sure he'll get it, and he probably shouldn't read it till he's at least 18, but I thank you for reading it, Alan. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I just love the fact that, like, you went and did adventures that, like, I've always dreamed of, man. Like, you've lived a life that, like, I've looked up to forever.
Thanks. I actually am really lucky because Luther, he got to see a lot of it, and I've gotten to talk to him a lot about it, and he's always been there, one step along the way, and he's a good friend of mine, and so I'm glad he's here today, too, to, just support. Never done a podcast. I don't think he has either.
No, I haven't. But I would totally agree with Alan that you have been a source of inspiration for me as well. I look to you at all the things that you've done, and I see. I wouldn't say I. What's the phrase? They like the parents who live through their children, kind of thing. What's that word? What's the phrase? I'm totally blanking on it. Anyway, but I wouldn't say I live through you, but I definitely draw inspiration from
vicariously.
Vicariously, thank you. I don't live vicariously. Vis-a-vis you, however, I would say that,
I felt the same way about you two.
No, I haven't done anything at all. I've just been wasting my time in Hong Kong, but as I've been doing that, as I have just been working and living my life, I every time I talk to you, I look at you and I remember the things that we've done, when we were young, and I think, wow, you're still living that life, and I'm still here. I'm here.
Well, I like to imagine that, but I now, I'm married and I have two kids, and they are awesome, and they're about everything. And so that life that is in Walking Patagonia, that is unfortunately over. I'm not going to go walking anywhere anymore. And I did think, all right, finally I was going to get some focus because I was living that life, and I've been really fortunate to even be able to. I think it's called taking advantages, maybe when you shouldn't, but you just kind of have to, and you feel it in your soul. You have to go do something, even if it probably, is not good for other people in your family or whatever. Sometimes you feel something inside you, and you've just got to go. So that kind of what drove me to walk across Patagonia and meet my wife in a small little mountain town deep in Patagonia. So I think it's fantastic, and now I get to look at the stars with two little boys. And so yeah, I feel very fortunate, and now I am trying to focus though, because that all sounds cool, but I had 7 years of college and I still don't have a diploma. So I have been getting by with the luxuries of life from, relative means, not rich really by any means, but, you know, middle class family that, you know, can get by. So I am lucky in that way. And I have taken advantage of it. But that hasn't gotten me anything up till this point, I guess you could say.
Hasn't gotten you anything. It's only gotten you
a
book, a family, a life that most people would be jealous of. And frankly, I think you're being a little too hard on yourself when you say that you're not going on any more walks, that your adventures are over. Because what did we just do 45 minutes ago? Nobody can see us right now, but we're both soaking wet.
We are soaking wet.
Walked through the pouring rain. We had been down at a dam over in Lake Fayetteville, and it started pouring rain on us. And
adventure's never going to end with you, my friend.
Exactly. This is being down in a dam, getting soaked in the rain, and having to like climb back up, get in our cars, drive here, soaking. I mean, completely miserable. Not even miserable. It's loving it in a way, but loving the misery.
Well, okay, so
that's the kind of adventure I don't have. I have with nobody except with you.
Well, thank you, and because I think we ask ourselves, and we have to put ourselves, you know, we talk about, I don't know, there's that meditation thing, or is that new age, kind of being in the moment, what's that called?
I know Eckhart Tolle has a book called The Power of Now.
No, but it's
Carpe,
like they
Carpe
have,
DM.
No,
YOLO.
No, they have those, like, it's almost like stores now where it's mindfulness, sorry.
Right.
Okay, so this mindfulness of being in the moment. And so I think we have to really ask ourselves, you know, if we're going to be in that moment, what do we want to see in that moment? And it's really all about, like, where we're putting our focus and what we're looking at. And I think that's, if we can find what that is, that's what is going to bring us this happiness. And this isn't something like I've known... And I haven't been, you know, I've been following, and, you know, but at times you do follow that. And I think that's what's important, even though, you know, what I can tell you is that, like, I'm still not going to be able to get a good job anywhere. And all that's fine. But what we're talking about now is Caspian Ray is trying to focus on three things. And, or Thomas. I think Caspian Ray Moore was there to see an event, but as we lead up to it,
and the event is being your the second book that you've written.
It's a short story, and it's just an event that Caspian Ray was fortunate enough to attend, and you know, I think it's fantastic that I got to be there. And so, Caspian Ray has written an account on his. Witnessing of this event, and it's the newest one. Like Walking Patagonia, it is a true story, almost. I had to make Walking Patagonia fun, but I didn't stretch anywhere that didn't just give you a laugh.
But that's all in good writing.
That's all, I guess. Yeah. You know,
you have to colorful
it
in the way that you felt it at the moment.
You have to tell a story.
You have to paint that picture.
That's also
good. And you have to tell it to an audience, right? Like, any good art is supposed to go to an audience. And I'm not sure who the audience is for this, but what I can tell you is that Thomas, in the story, is trying to focus on three things in his life. And he thinks... You know, three things, that's good. He's been focusing on everything that pops into his head, because life is awesome, and he's got the opportunity to explore it, so he's going to go there, every there. That's where he's going. And he has looked into biocentrism, and that was kind of the idea that made him think, okay, you know, where am I? And where do we exist in the world and in existence itself? And so he's been trying to figure that out his whole life. Biocentrism kind of gave him the first step to say, like, okay, there really is something else out there. You kind of always feel it. You want to doubt it. Life gives you so many reasons to doubt. and they come all the time, and it always seems to be like a present in everyone's life, you know, where the fuck is God, right? And we say it, and maybe some of us don't say it, but sometimes we feel it. And so, what is talked about in the new story is a fight that Caspian Ray witnessed Thomas have with God and his brother-in-law. And so what happens in the story is Thomas sees the Son of God, and it's his goddamn brother-in-law. And it's true. It's a true story. So, Caspian Ray saw it happen. And Luther, you know, I was going to believe, well, actually, I can read the end of the story here.
We don't want to give away any spoilers to your book either.
It's a short story. There is only one reason for it. I just told you what that was.
So Thomas is the main character in this story.
Well, there's Thomas and Paul. You know, Paul's that hard-working apostle. You know, he's.
So, are these apocryphal names? Do these have meaning to the story?
Well, I would say the story, the names make the story fun, and the names are what give the audience to the story.
So Caspian, this is something that you witnessed yourself, and this is a story that you're relating?
I witnessed the story, and I am giving the names of the people that I witnessed the story to, Thomas and Paul. That is, I believe, what gives the art to the story. And good art has an audience. And I think that should make the audience obvious. And who it is, if it's not so obvious, would be one of the three focuses in Thomas's life, because he was trying to narrow down to three, because he's had so many. And so the easiest one was his family, because, you know, he loves them the most, and he wanted to take pictures of the stars, and he doesn't really know why, but he just likes seeing what's up there. And the other one was he had joined a church. You know, what the fuck else would you do if you've been looking for God? You walked across the desert, and you'd never seen it.
So walking Patagonia originally was an attempt to find God for you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are like 40 days in the desert. There are ideas that like walking for long distances can bring you to mental states.
That's definitely a thing. I mean, there's so many pilgrimages in different religions.
Correct. That's the word I've been looking for days, and I haven't come up with it. So thank you, Alan fucking Mo.
You're welcome.
I didn't even want to like Google search or try to figure out the word, because, you know, I guess I knew it was going to come here. You know, pilgrimages.
Dude, yeah. Everything happens for a reason, and so like that's why. Like starting back with like your wheatgrass, like that was one of the first times I remember seeing. Like, you delve off into something that was originally your own. And I was like, dude, that is so epic. And that's what this is all about to me. That's why you're here.
Okay, well, thank you.
Is because you have original thoughts and you chase your own dreams. And, like, when we were talking about earlier before I was able to get my stuff up and recording, like, success is something that you define for yourself. And, like, just listening to you, like, through this last 15 minutes, it appears that, like, you're way harder on yourself than what you should be. And so throughout this podcast, the best thing that I could do for you is to get you to see some of the positive sides of everything that you've accomplished. That would mean the world to me, man.
If I started off that way, you know, I completely apologize. I consider myself the luckiest guy in the world. I wrote that in Walking Patagonia. I love life, so...
Which is obvious in all your adventures, but
it's the struggle that defines us, and that's what forces us to better ourselves. So, you know, we're here to help you be realistic about that, and, you know, maybe we're all our own harshest critic.
We are. That's actually a very true thing. So that's why whenever someone does anything wrong, it's like it's so bad for us to come on to them, because realistically, if they look at it themselves retrospectively, it's only a matter of time before they're going to beat themselves up way harder than anything that we can say.
For sure. Here in the story, you know, Thomas, as an elder in the church, he's been thinking, like, you know, it's pretty fucked up because you all found this book and it's got all these things that somebody said that I said, Jesus said, and it kind of sounds true. You know, if you read the Gospel of Thomas, and I'm not talking about any of the other Gnostic Gospels, because the Gospel of Thomas is not Gnostic. There's only maybe one or two lines in there that, you know, you could think they were Gnostic. And so Thomas is like, man, you know, give me at least one of these lines. You know, Jesus really said one of those. And if you all aren't searching for that, what are you doing? If Jesus is number one, you know, you're not even looking for one of the lines. You can't even tell me one of the lines. You're going to say, oh, well, we're not going to choose any. We're still going to keep them all out. And I think that's what the church is showing, is they are now the doubters in a potential new word of Jesus Christ or anything that has been seen, right? And they have become the Thomases. And that's what, you know, Thomas in the story would be feeling here in this moment of the story, the double slit experiment. The legend of Hare Mountain, Caspian Rice saw.
That's also what goes to make Thomas more of an everyman kind of figure, is that he has all of these thoughts, but he, you know, like Alan said, we all have these original ideas, but it's hard for us to manifest them into action.
Yeah, I know Emma Steinkross, you know, I'm not creating wonderful, huge, you know, beautiful rooms of art.
But we all could. I mean, that's the potential in all of us. And part of what Thomas, you know, makes him a doubter and makes us all doubters is that at some point we all look at what we are and what we become and we say, is this truly who I am? And when we come face to face with that, we realize that it's not just us. You know, it's not just a problem that we have ourselves. It's something that, you know, if you talk to anybody, they say, you know, that's something I've dealt with too. And so really, the audience... For the story and for all of these parables is pretty much anybody over like a certain age, maybe over the age of 18, anyone who's had a modicum of life experiences at all.
Well, a pastor did tell Thomas that, you know, it's the idea that Jesus can be inside any of us at any time, and even the ones we don't like, and truly anyone, even Thomas's goddamn brother-in-law.
So Thomas in the story is trying to, throughout the entire story, he's trying to narrow his focuses rather than say, okay, I'm going to spend today, like you said, in one day, it's very, very, very hard.
On one thing.
On, yes.
Okay, so like three, he's got three. You know, like that's the Trinity. Okay, I've got my God, I've got the soul, like, and then I've got the life, okay? And those are those three of the Trinity, whether you want to call them, like, Jesus, God, and the Holy Spirit, or whatever three.
So, in Thomas's background, has he always been religious? Like, has he always been a Christian, God-fearing man?
So here in the story, you know, he has always looked for it, but he's willing, really, to try anything, even tummo meditation. So, really anything, he has spent a lifetime, but he always figures that the best way is to even get there by a car. That's why he walked. It's like, you know, you don't need to fly. And you probably shouldn't fly. You know, if you're doing it for fun. The only time you fly is if you want, if you got to talk to God.
You think so? You think that flying's just to be closer to heaven, speak to God?
I mean, if you do it any other way, like, you don't know what you're asking for, and you never know what you're asking for, but the doubt of that thing, I think, can either, it can either make or break you. And, you know, if you want to play that game, you know, I think that's even a worse game than any kind of Vegas or any kind of lottery, you know, because you might not notice it immediately, but after a week or after a few days, like, the moment ends and you're back in everything and you have forgotten it and it is gone and it was just a fun time. And none of what you felt was real. And so if you're going to do it that way, like, that's the equivalent of going into the kingdom of heaven, taking a piece of the golden road and coming back and looking at it for a second, and then it goes in the trash. And, like, when you do that, it's going to be really hard for you to take the step, I think, to truly believe anything. And, like, to have real faith in anything.
So that's how you conquer the doubt?
I think only if you have to. And you know, if you can get there by driving, or if you can get there by walking, or if you can get there any other way, like, you probably shouldn't. It needs to be only if you want to, only for God. And that's what...
Do you think it's an elevation thing?
In the story, is that he can. There's only one thing that he can focus on, and put first. At least try to, because he's still a POS and he knows it. And, like, his brother-in-law's not fucking Jesus. At least not anymore.
But in that moment, he knew it.
In the moment, he had no doubt. He had no doubt, and he saw it, and it was real. And even though everything else was uncertain, he knew Jesus was there, and it was his goddamn brother-in-law. So, that's what happens in the double slit experiment. And, you know, because you know at the end of everything, you know, you're going to stop seeing the story, and the legend and all those waves of probability that biocentrism will show you exist, you know, it's going to be gone, and you'll stop believing it happened unless you stop denying it. And, you know, I could only realize that because I wanted to laugh it off and say, like, you know, shit, my boots will be on Hare Mountain forever. And Thomas's wedding ring will be on Hare Mountain forever. Because he had to give it up for God. Because he saw Jesus Christ. Thomas did. And, you know, you can deny it. Or not, and it doesn't matter. because we can live nonfiction or we can live fiction, but if God or anything else is going to be the one, that infinite wave of probabilities, God has to be a particle too. And sometimes you can either believe in life or not.
So it's a quantum problem of both being there and not there at the same time. And that's why you named the book The Double Slit Experiment.
It's there when you look for it. But it's not there if you don't. And sometimes you still might not even see it.
So it's kind of like some Schrodinger's cat almost. Pavlov's dog.
The Schrodinger's cat is an interesting one, and you know, so many things like we can't and we will never wrap our minds around. And you know, I think if there is, you know, it has to be one, and the one can go to three, and the three is, you know, can go to you and me and in infinity, but we all have to start with the one and putting the one first in our lives. And if we do that,
and if you read the story, this will all be clear.
Maybe.
Or listen to this soon to become audiobook.
But that's the story of the legend of Hair Mountain, the Double Slit Experiment. And I saw it. Caspian Ray saw it happen.
Just to be clear, this all happened.
I saw it happen and I wrote it down. But it happened to Thomas. It didn't happen to me. I just saw it happen. And I won't deny that I saw it happen. And, you know. That's what happened.
Sounds exciting.
Sounds very exciting. Because, like, with Walking Patagonia, one of my favorite parts about it is as you describe the characters. Because, I mean, obviously, you are Caspian Ray, but I know you as a, you know, different person. So then whenever I think of the people as you describe the characters, I wonder, it's just, do I know these people too? I may or may not. There's mystery to it. And then did he give him a different name as he describes this person? This kind of sounds like this person I knew. This kind of sounds like this person I knew. That mystery, like, it's so alluring. Like, man, like, I was really enjoying it. Like, I can't even tell you how much I enjoy it. So I read the little bits of the rough draft as you were sending me of this one, and I was getting into it too. I can't wait to see the whole thing in all of its entirety, because I mean, the way that you write, it definitely sucks the reader in. I just had a good feeling. I really like your ability to just go after what you truly believe in. Like, you follow your heart, and like, that's awesome. Like, I want to know how you went from just, like, where the whole, like, I'm going to get this awesome old truck, and I'm going to start carrying these wooden crates, and I'm going to have a bow tie and a button-up shirt, and I'm going to deliver wheatgrass, and, like, all around Fayetteville, like, dude, you started your own business, and then, like, took off, and then, like, left in height, came back as an author, went from being an author to, like, you sold honey for a while, right?
So one of the guys that walked with me, he and I wanted to import some honey and sell from Patagonia, and he was great. He went all over the country selling it, and just you know, we had the pandemic, and it just
life throws curveballs.
Yeah, well, it sure does, and we are cold because we ran here in the rain.
You can't hear us shivering.
Yeah, and that's what you can know, like, or Thomas finds out, like, you know, it's going to rain. It will rain. And it's going to rain down on you. But, you know, all you can do, and what you got to do, is keep putting wood on that fire. So when the rain comes, you know, you can still be warm.
So that's another theme of the book, is that they're trying to build a fire. And
they have to build, there is no other option on Hare Mountain than to build a fire.
Naturally, that's what you do when you're on a mountain.
Yeah. But
not me. I'm crazy. I will hike like 25, right. 30 miles
okay,
in a day.
That's what
when I get to the spot that I'm going to go to sleep at, mm-hmm. I can still have my backpack on, lean up against a tree, and pass out.
That is.
And then when the sun comes up, I'm like, all right, let's go. And I'll pull a freaking candy bar out of the head of my backpack and then just keep moving. Like, I don't want to cook. I don't want to build a fire. I don't want to set up a tent. Like, it's just all go, man. Like, we can sleep in the dirt for all I care. It's about being out there, being grounded. Like connected to nature is the closest thing that you're going to get to whatever anyone's esoteric idea of a religion is, in my opinion. Like the church to me is when you're outside. It's the sunshine, it's the birds, it's the bees.
I love that. Yeah.
It's the living the life,
for
you know?
Sure.
Like, my goal is to try to, at some point, have enough money to go live in Norway for a little bit where you have the right to roam, where, like,
mm-hmm.
I could live out of a Hilleberg tent. Dude, when you,
right.
some of the stuff you
Hilleberg.
Mentioned in the book, Hilleberg's the best tents that have ever been created.
Of course.
Like, dude, you're
one
right up my alley on so
thing.
Many things, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's the luxury that Thomas realizes.
That's not a luxury, though.
Well, the Hilleberg tent,
yeah, well,
like,
we had to ditch
is.
It.
Well, Hilleberg tent is kind of, I mean, it's a luxury among tents. It's not a shitty Coleman tent, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Do you want to go camping in a Coleman tent?
Okay, so my first...
Answer
the question.
No,
do you want
no.
You don't want to go camping in a Coleman tent?
I'd rather not sleep in a Coleman tent.
Okay.
No, I'd rather... I mean,
we
spend a lot of time sleeping in no tent. That's
well,
in Patagonia.
Sure, I'd rather sleep in no tent than in a Coleman tent.
In
Watson,
Patagonia, we have
does not want to sleep in a Coleman tent. In this story, he will move. There is nothing that is making Thomas madder than a fucking shitty Coleman tent.
I remember
and I don't
that
know if it would make you mad if the rain is coming
and
you
know you're in a
Coleman
tent.
And your brother-in-law wants to sleep in his shitty Coleman tent over Thomas's Hilleberg tent.
Can't even put up a tarp.
Oh no, I'm the same way, man.
The
like
fucking
if I'm
tarp.
If I'm trying to do something and someone has like a less like it's like, dude, this is definitely a subpar idea. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a really hard time grasping, like, the ability for them to think that that's okay. You know, like, I get more mad with their reasoning than I am with what we're going to have to go through.
I agree.
I can suffer through the Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact
it's the
that we had an option.
Yeah.
And
right.
you chose
right.
stupidity. Like, if you were ignorant, you know what I'm saying? If I was like, do you understand about Hilleberg tents and Coleman tents?
Right.
You know the difference? Mm-hmm. And you were like... You were like, no, I don't.
Well,
and I was like, okay, let me educate you real quick. And I explained it. And then you were like,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
going to,
right.
You're right. You know, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can be taught. But
yeah.
if it's like, hey,
yeah.
I went and hiked Patagonia
yeah.
with this tent and you bought this shit from Walmart for
$20.
Yeah. Which one do you think we should take?
They still
well,
and they're like, dude, let's take my $20 tent, bro.
Yeah.
But at the same time, think of it from a different perspective. I like to look things from a different
exactly.
angle
sure.
to give
yeah,
people
sure.
the benefit of the
right.
doubt. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt
thank
so
you.
I don't get
he,
mad
yeah,
at you.
He deserves it. Yeah.
And
he deserves
in this
it,
instance, right. this guy could be like, hey, I don't want to fuck up your Hilleberg tent.
Right.
And so
sure.
he brings the shitty tent because if anything happens
sure.
to it and it caught on fire... Then he wouldn't be mad at the
yeah.
end of the
well,
day.
That, that's,
yeah, yeah. I would
that's
feel very
actually
bad.
A little too generous
yeah.
as well.
Right.
But
I'll always
it's,
be too generous.
Well, it's,
sure.
equally, it's equally likely that he just had this tent. He never used it. He's like, oh, it's an excuse to use
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And so
yeah.
I look for a
close.
Reason to not be
right.
mad at people's stupidity.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Sure.
I
and
yeah,
he
the,
had
the older
only
I get, the more I try
once.
To do that.
Right.
Yeah.
In the story, he'd only use it once. And so he was like, oh, man, come on. I've only used it once. Let's use it. Live a little.
He's obviously never used it in the rain.
and they get very wet. Almost as wet as I am now, but not even close. I'm telling you, not even close.
I got
close.
A down blanket if you need it.
No, I'm fine. Because, you know, sometimes you need to feel it.
You got to embrace
so,
it.
Oh, dude, you have to embrace the suck. Brian Davis and I went on a... We tried to hike Ozark Highland Trail, nothing
mm-hmm.
comparatively to what you did. But we averaged 20 miles a day over the course of 4 days.
That's
good.
Pretty good.
During
pretty good.
One of the worst droughts that we've ever experienced.
Oh.
And we were just embracing the suck, man. Like mosquito bites.
Embrace
yeah.
the
and
suck.
Mosquito bites out the ass over 100 degrees. Everywhere that they're like, there's supposed to be water at this crossing. Like we're crossing
yep.
these creeks and like the part of Lake Fort Smith that we crossed
don't
even. Dry. You know, it was like, holy fuck. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, you get through the best you can.
Yeah,
but at that point,
you've got two choices.
You would be putting wood on the fire.
Yeah, but yeah,
right now, your fire's burning, and it feels good, right?
Yeah.
Once you've hit a point of no return like that, you can say, okay, well, we can complain about it and just sit here and like wallow in misery, or we can just say, all right, this is how it is. Just keep going forward.
Have you ever ran like a marathon or any kind of something? Like,
did
any of you guys do like cross country or anything? No, I wasn't a track athlete, so.
No, but a half marathon. And
I did a half marathon.
They do have the runner's high, and
it feels great, dude.
It's real.
It is.
No, and my thought was, okay, I have heard the average marathon time is like 4 hours, and so I kind of think that's another one of these coincidences in life, is that I heard on Discovery Channel, or I'm not sure where, and you should probably look it up to check, but in Africa, it takes like 4 hours to chase down. I'm not sure if it was a gazelle or what kind of deer or what kind of, but like an animal or a mammal, you can run it down in like 4 hours or something along those lines. And that's a marathon time. And I thought,
it's like the perfect amount of time, like the maximum.
Yeah. And so you run that amount of time, or you start running and it's like, you're going to get meat. And so I wonder if, like, that kind of endorphins have been evolved over...
Oh, so check it. So I looked it up. I looked it up while you're talking about it. So check it out. It's called persistence hunting. Basically, you follow the prey...
Until it just gets tired.
Until it gets tired.
And passes out.
The average time is 5 hours or 22 miles.
Wow. Yeah, 22 miles.
Yep. So roughly a marathon.
Kind of like a marathon. Yeah, okay, so... But yeah, exactly. And that's kind of an idea I've had in my head.
Yeah, and you were right. It was Kalahari Desert, Southern Africa.
But you get like a runner's high, maybe because, you know, that has been evolutionary. The endorphins come from, I have to run because I'm going to eat, you know? And you know it, and that's what fills you up, even before you get the food, right?
Well, I've heard that it's a bigger... comparative evolutionary advantage in humans is not, like, our biggest advantage is not our intelligence, it's actually our endurance. Like, if you compare human beings to other animals, the thing that separates us most from other animals, the most, is not intelligence, it's our ability to run.
To endure. The two hunters that do that persistence hunting are humans and canids. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It was the only persistence hunting that came up on Wikipedia, at least.
I think the only animal that can travel a longer distance in a shorter amount of time than a human is a kangaroo.
Yeah.
I believe. Like, I can't remember what I read, but it's something like if you took I think it's the amount of time it takes for every animal to run, I think it was 100 miles, and human beings came out number two. Surprising. I thought horse would come out number one. Like, if you guessed, like, of all the animals to run 100 miles, what would be the fastest? I would guess horse.
Right. No, they tire out, man.
Yeah,
they're so big.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, kangaroo is number one. Human was number two.
It's a good thing to know we can outrun a lot of shit if we really put our mind to it. You just keep going and they'll fucking leave you alone.
They'll get tired.
Yeah. Well, we can do a lot, if we put our minds to it.
Like, back to you doing a lot. So going from wheatgrass... Well, where did that go? Like, how did the wheatgrass end because you went to Patagonia?
Well, no, the wheatgrass ended when, not too long after we had our first kid, and we realized, like, you know, this is a lot of work, and being a farmer is hard, and it was even like an indoor farmer, and we're not making any money like most farmers. We tried to sell it, and no one really wanted it. And so we had a lot of customers. We were in quite a few big stores, but it just is not, or it's difficult to make money. And
it's
impossible to take a vacation. I think it's hard for a lot of small businesses, and you know, a lot of people try, and a lot of people try to get their fires going. Like Thomas had in the book. You know, a lot of people try over and over and over again to get their fire started. And so that's the fight that we wanted to talk to about tonight. Like, you know, the fight that Thomas had on Hare Mountain with God. Because Thomas is the luckiest guy on the fucking earth, right? And he knows it. And so, you know, he, most of the time, he is really happy and he's not even mad at God. But he has a fight with God for the world. For the year of the pandemic, the quarantine. And it feels in the story that it feels now, you know, Thomas knows that tomorrow people will still get mad and, you know, their anger is not gone. But in the story, it feels that Thomas is screaming and is angry with God for the entire world. And that is an incredibly difficult feeling to feel, right? And he, you know, Cassian Ray is not sure, and he knows he can't put any of this stuff, like, really into words correctly. And he's edited it a million times, and, you know, it's always changing they to the, or just trying to figure out, like, how do you recall a moment when two guys are flying, right? And so that is impossible, really, to ever put down correctly. So, but he knows in the story that Thomas is angry for the entire world. And you can feel the anger coming out of you. And he is screaming and fighting with God. A pastor might say that that sounds like Jacob, or yeah, I think it's Jacob in Genesis. You know, consequently, that would be Caspian Ray's old business partner. With the honey from Patagonia. And, you know, gosh, that's funny. But,
so where does the fire come into this?
Well, Paul wants the fire, okay? Paul, and who, you know, I guess, Caspian had to look it up because his buddy was...
So what keeps happening to the fire? Like, can you explain that?
Well, okay, sure. The fire keeps going out. Because it's going to rain on Hare Mountain. And it's cold, and it's been raining for a month on in Arkansas.
So Paul, so Thomas and Paul, they succeed in making the fire, and then it goes out?
Where it's just not one start, it's having a hard start.
You know, you will just, you know when, like, everything is so wet... Everything is so wet, you can't get a fire started, right?
Yeah, nothing will
You
take.
Know in your life when it's like, fuck.
But you gotta keep trying. You keep. This is what you've set your mind on.
Right. You gotta keep trying.
And eventually, a fire does get, you do make a fire. They make a fire, correct?
Sometimes. Not all the time, so.
Think the fire's coming, yeah. Right?
But
it starts raining.
Yeah.
It starts raining, and on Hare Mountain, it started raining.
Again and again.
And then the fire... So it's like, okay, we gotta put up this fucking tarp. Because the tarp's on the ground. And, like, they don't want to be in the tent all night flying in the rain in a Coleman tent. On Hare Shitty Mountain. You know? Thomas isn't even in someplace cool. He's not in Colorado. He's not... He's on Hare Mountain. He's been there a million times. He knows this forest.
And for the listeners, Hare Mountain is not a very is nothing spectacular.
Yeah.
It's more like
it's okay.
Like a, it's like a hill.
It's a big yes.
Yeah.
It's
a
hill.
Large hill.
It's a mountain
yeah.
called the hill.
Or a hill called a mountain.
It's not so. The anger is profound, And then all Paul wants to do is get this fire started. And it's like, Paul, dude, okay, can we should just sit up the tarp, sit under the tarp, let's hang out, or walk a trail. Let's go explore. Because Thomas at least wants to explore. He's always wanted to, you know, maybe we can see something cool. If we just go try, look a little further, and maybe this is a metaphor for life too, but if we just go try and look a little further, like, maybe we're going to find and see that cool thing. And so Thomas, he just wants to keep looking for it because he also always kind of doubts it, right?
That the next big thing's just around the bend?
Yeah, and this one was cool. I got to see it pretty good. Let's go a little further. Let's go see something else. Like, it was really cool, but man, it's not enough to give me my life. Like, to give my life to. Like, man, this was cool, but I cannot give my life to that. Thomas, you know, is thinking. So he's got to keep looking and keep looking. And he wants to hike those trails and go see more. And he wants to see more, right? But Paul, like, he just wants to work on getting this fire going. And he wants to work and work and work. And Thomas can always feel like, you know, I'm not helping enough. I want to go hike this trail. Like, I want to go have fun while someone else works. And, you know, maybe we feel we do this with our spouses sometimes. Maybe we feel we do this in a whole bunch of areas of our life. But, like, we go and do something and, you know, it makes someone else work harder. In big and small. It doesn't have to be much. But, you know, anytime you go look for something, it's like, man, this is all the same shit. It really is deep down, and you keep looking, and you keep looking, and he keeps going for more and more things. And so he starts narrating the metaphor that, you know, every step I take, every step you take in life is harder, and it's like the wood is just keeps getting wetter and wetter, and it's harder to get that fire burning because you've already seen so much of it. You've already felt so much of that fire, and you've got to keep getting more wood, and it's harder to burn, and you got to keep putting more and more to get that same bit that you got out of it. And, like, how is that? That is so hard to be satisfying for Thomas. And Paul just wants to work on that fire because he knows, like, if I just keep working, we will get that fire. And so, but every time, it keeps raining. So you get a little fire, and the rain comes, something bad happens, you know, maybe it's a death in a family, I'm not sure, but the rain will come again, and you get a little bit more, and the rain comes back, and sometimes you might feel like that you are in a loop and you can't even put up your goddamn tarp. You can't even give up that little bit of luxury because every time it stops raining, you've got to go back and get that fire started and you got so much shit to do. And all you want to do is go see something else and go find something new, right? And maybe we all feel that way for a little bit. And so Thomas sometimes has to go for walks, but he keeps turning around. And it's like Paul's still working on that fire. And you go, okay, you know, oh, fucking K, I'll go get some more wood. And you go put it on, and it rains again. And then it stops raining. And you got to go back and put more wood on the fire. And they can't get out of this loop. And it's instantaneous. You feel like you get a little bit, and the fire goes out, and you say, God damn it. And then, you know, Thomas, in the story, he gets, well, Paul and him, they get the fire. And, you know, they hug each other, and they just feel each other's love. And the real love that, you know, they worked on something together as a team with another person for another person, You were doing it for him. He was doing it for you. And it had to be done. And you had to get that fire started. And you did it for each other. And you do it for someone else. And it's maybe that's a metaphor in life for what we need to do in our lives with the people around us. To be seen, as biocentrism would say, like where you are on your on the wave of probabilities. Because maybe your particle exists where other people see you and not as much where you think it is in your mind.
To me, it seems like one of the biggest issues is that, like, Thomas is having an issue of finding contentment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in a way, he's almost jealous of Paul, because Paul can find contentment in the most mundane of fucking things.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I can identify to this is because my girlfriend right now is a twin. Yep. And her sister, the person that she's with is like a completely different person than me. And he's happy in ways that I can never be. And it doesn't make sense to me, and it's not a negative thing. But it makes me feel negative thoughts and feelings. And he's completely happy and content.
Right.
And I'm the person who's not happy and content.
No, he's the
because I'm comparing my life to the ignorance is bliss model.
Wow.
He can be ignorant and be completely bliss and just be like, fuck it. I could be poor, I could be whatever, and I'm happy. And I'm over here like, I work my ass off to try to make six figures.
Yeah.
And I'm an owner, I'm a leader, I'm always trying to improve everything I can do. I'm trying to be better, 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 better. What can I do for you? What can I do for you? Hi, how can I help you? What can I do? Poof, what do you need? Poof, what do you need? Poof, what do you need? And then there's like, and when I'm like, hey man, can you do this for me? Usually it's like, oh man, no, sorry, I can't.
It's the rain.
And it's like, dude, how can you be so happy doing nothing for anyone other than yourself and just be happy and fuck the world, no one else matters. And I can be over here and take care of everything in the world and be stressed to death and never feel like I'm, like, successful. You know what I mean? Because I know exactly that even if someone looks up and goes, man, you're doing a great job, I'm like, it's not good enough. And it's like somebody could be like, dude, that's great. I'm like, that's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough. I'm never going to ever think. That's why my podcast is insistent on improvement, because I'm insistent on improving, because mm-hmm. nothing I will ever look at will be good enough. So when I look at someone and they're like, my life's good enough, I'm like, how? How?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me your secrets.
Right.
And not that I think in negative that they can live a life lesser than me. Mm-hmm. And the way I want to look at it is it's a bad thing. But in reality, their happiness is like one of the most positive things that anyone could ask for. When you look at happiness, like there's a thing on Netflix, a documentary, like the happiest people in the world are the poorest people in Russia. They're like this upper part of like northern Serbia or whatever. Mm-hmm. Where, like, they're really isolated.
Their life is really hard.
They're extremely poor. Yeah. Their life's so fucking hard. But their community and their happiness are, like, next level. You know what I mean? And it's like...
No, I felt that in Patagonia. You know, like, you're in the middle of nowhere. This woman is 70 years old, but she looks like she's 120. And
just smiling with no teeth.
She's chopping a knife so fast. And she's smiling and she's dancing to this old music that only is powered by... like a car battery
mm-hmm.
on a radio. Man.
Everybody's so industrious in countries that aren't first world.
I'd like to offer an alternative viewpoint. And it goes back to what you were saying, to giving people the benefit of the doubt. The older I get, the more I've come to the realization that they're the geniuses. The average person who has a life that they're happy with, and they're actually, like, I go around thinking, okay, I've got everything figured out. You know, I know who I am, and this mm-hmm. like, I see the way the world works, and you know, this is like you said. I'm trying to like better myself, trying to help people, trying to do all these things. But I look at someone else and say, oh, they're ignorant. They've got the ignorance is bliss model. They're happy. But why am I making the assumption that they're ignorant? Maybe I'm the ignorant one.
Because I'm trying so fucking hard and they've got it figured out.
Maybe they are the one who have it figured out. And like it's not that they've chosen ignorance as bliss. It's just that they see the world for what it is and they've chosen to participate in it.
Just
participate. While we are standing on the outside and saying, you know, hey, why is the world
just
like
participate,
this?
Participate,
You know, and that's why, as a 34-year-old, I'm back at the University of Arkansas studying for a bachelor's degree is because I'd been fighting the world for, you know, 20 years, or not 20 years, 15 years, saying, okay, the world's fucked up. I'm going to make my way in the world, doing it my way. This is how it's going to be. And then the world fights back in a way, you know, it beats you down, and then you realize, okay, I'm looking into the abyss. I'm looking at the void. Mm-hmm. And I can run away from it, you know, screaming for my entire life and say, okay, no, that monster doesn't exist. That thing's not real. It just denies existence. Or you can turn around, open your arms, and embrace it and say, you know, I'm going to be part of this. And it's not defeatist. There's happiness in that. There's happiness in becoming an average person. Like, maybe the ambition of wanting to be somebody, like saying, hey, I am a special person. I need to be unique. I need the world to remember me. I need to be somebody. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that all the people who don't think that and who just, you know, who are born, have kids and die and do what they like in life and are forgotten to history, those are the real heroes. And the people that we hear about and we look up to, the real, you know, quote unquote heroes in life, those are the people who actually just had the ambition to write the stories about themselves. You know, and I'm starting. Oh, the older I get,
regular,
this,
yeah.
Yeah. The older I get, the more I am.
My goddamn.
The more I idolize average people.
Thomas's brother-in-law, goddamn brother-in-law,
yes,
became Jesus.
Yes, I'm
and
seeing.
So,
I'm
yes,
seeing God in average people.
It's
more
gotta
and more.
Be in every. Yeah.
Well,
and the problem is me.
It's gotta be in everyone.
You know.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Is unfortunate for Thomas.
Yeah, no, average people on like seem to have it made because like I know a lot of us were in like gifted, like we think outside the box and like we have this idea and I tell my friends that are artists and stuff all the time, writers, different stuff, I'm like, first thing you need to understand is that majority of the people that you would deem to be successful didn't become successful until post-mortem.
True.
So like,
true.
The greatest of the greats,
mm-hmm,
were successful after,
yeah,
death.
Yeah.
They lived a life of,
yeah,
misery,
exactly,
and suffering. And in misery and suffering, we,
yeah,
produce
the,
our best self.
That's the most virtuous.
You know
way
what I'm saying?
Great.
You become,
great,
but you have to embrace,
sir,
that. That's,
yes,
where you turn,
yes,
around.
I agree with
you
that.
Embrace the void.
Yes, sir.
You look at the edge and you say, I could jump off the cliff, but if I jump off this cliff, I'm going to fly with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in my death, there's going to be a beautiful awakening. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so like, what you do is you stop looking at something as being definitive of happiness and now, because happiness is fleeting. What you look for is consistency in your feeling. So like, if I can consistently feel more neutral, then I'm balancing my wavelength pattern.
Yes,
but
sir,
if I'm have,
yes,
moments of happiness, I'm also,
mm-hmm,
going to have moments of extreme tragedy.
Absolutely. Well, I felt that way. Yeah,
we
talked about
that.
And so you
want
to balance.
Yes.
You want to balance out to as neutral as you can,
mm-hmm,
get.
True.
As much as possible.
As
so when you get consistent,
down,
try to build a consistent life, then everything else starts to become.
Yes.
Because you're not weighing on happiness anymore. You're not,
right,
weighing on,
yeah,
success.
Yeah. If
like
you
you're
see
just
those highs
finding
the highs, then when you hit the lowest, they,
right,
will be lower.
So
than
you just
ever
find your harmony.
Yes.
And,
right,
that is the secret to your,
mm-hmm,
serenity.
Yes. Right.
And your wavelength is different,
right,
than your wavelength.
Absolutely.
And different than my wavelength.
Absolutely.
And the friends that we find are the people that operate on roughly the same wavelength,
mm-hmm,
as us,
mm-hmm,
to where we can produce a beautiful music note together. You know what I mean? But whenever we look at the people that want to have something now, then what happens is it's just like a volatile stock market. We start having lots of ups and lots of downs. We're having panic buys, panic sells.
Yeah.
We don't know what to do, and our life becomes turmoil. You,
yes,
know what,
sir,
I'm saying? But,
yes, sir,
the sooner that you just find any bit of routine and you just get into a pattern and you start adapting to the way you want,
mm-hmm,
to make your life,
mm-hmm,
then you can find success in those small things. You could be like, man, I could just be like the Dalai Lama and live off of $17 a month. You
well,
know,
what Thomas, that's exactly true. And so what Thomas figures out in the story is that, you know, God is going to make it rain on him for the rest of his fucking life. You know, if that thing that you're talking about is not God to Thomas. He will never be able to take pictures of the stars again, and it will rain every day for its life. And it will never get a fire started. if God is not number one to Thomas after this event. So we'll see where that takes Thomas.
That's pretty heavy. I feel like trying to put something like that ahead, because I look at things completely differently than a lot of people, I feel like, because I grew up in a Christian home. And I felt like I was indoctrinated.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't given an opportunity being in the Bible Belt to like really truly branch out. But then as I got older, I realized how much I was. I went to Bates Elementary, mm-hmm. and so the place I grew up, Carlson Terrace, yeah. had it was the student dorm. So for the
like
families,
student,
so yeah, international yeah. students. So. Everywhere around the world was at my apartments, and everyone that went to those apartments went to my elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I got so much experience, and then that made me look at everything differently, because I was like, wait, so all this stuff about these people that I'm friends with, all these kids, they go to hell now? You're full of shit, all right? I'm sorry, but that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I can't look at anything morally in my heart. Do on others as you'd have them do unto you. Jesus loves all the little children in the world. And then turn around and look at my buddy from Sri Lanka yeah. and go, hey, your parents are going to go to hell because you don't believe
right.
in God.
They accept Jesus.
Right. You know, I can't no. do yeah. it. I can't do
no.
it.
I refuse to accept that a benevolent God would do such a thing.
But hearing things like God fighting or people being mad at God for like the coronavirus and all these things, these are all godly things. These are all things God's done throughout history. These are things like I accept Christian things. I accept things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying, but I also feel like there's a possibility that when we try to deliver a message, we're going to deliver that message through many different prophets.
Sure.
I don't like the idea
sure.
that
oh, yeah.
one way is
I
the
agree.
Right way. I don't like the fact
well,
that there are things in like Christianity and Buddhism and these different things that make it to where men are better than women and any of these things where I feel like there's
sure.
issues.
No.
I feel like that isn't like God. That's
right.
not very godly.
Right.
And I disagree with it. And that was something that when the man pinned it, he added the embellishments to his
sure.
favor.
Mm-hmm.
And so
sure. So,
so we have to go off of what we feel. So then to me, with God being present everywhere with the double slit experiment and God also being the wave particle, our lives being the wave particle, we are God and God is us in everything all together because we all came from the same
right.
into existence.
Right.
And everything in history, in everything in the universe, Nikola Tesla tells us, look at it in the form of a wave pattern. And so if we look at things in that nature, we are all God. And so that's why whenever we accept our own positive affirmations and we talk to ourselves, we pray, we do things in a good way, we have a positive outcome.
Well, what,
and if you do things negatively, you'll have a negative outcome. Because
sure.
if you beat up on yourself, if you down yourself, if you, man, I'm this, that, or whatever, you're always going to end up with a negative outcome. You're going to go a downward spiral of life. And because God can be in anything, he's in everything. And so it's not denouncing one religion or saying there's not a supreme being or there's not a whatever. It's looking at it as we are all one
mm-hmm.
in the universe. And then the collectiveness of us all is God.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to call my local inquisitor to talk about this heresy that you're preaching.
Well, I would have to agree. I would say that what then it, I do think something for sure, like, is above, there is, I, for lack of a better word, I would feel like, and it does say this in the Bible, in the fig tree moment where like I have watched you, I see you, and I do think if we feel like we are being seen and if we believe that we are being seen, like where are we gonna put that particle? And I think that's the question that is asked in the
so,
book, and so Thomas decides, like, the only thing that he can really do, because anywhere he goes now, he is afraid of the bear, and he can't do anything without deciding to say, okay, God, I don't know how to, but I have to put you first in what I'm thinking and trying to do, what I'm living my life, and that's, I think, what is the thing to do. And we have faith that I don't know how to do it, but I'm just going to try to do it, and it's going to be different for everybody, for sure. For sure, we're all not going to the same places, and we all don't want the same things, but I think, you know, it is the kingdom come, and that's how we get there, for sure.
I think that
God number one.
I think that you've lived a life of already putting God number one, and that the business of church in some regard has, like, clouded your mind into, like, what God is, because God isn't, like if God is, like, what I was saying, right? And you were to put God first, then every time that you're trusting your gut and you're saying, I'm going to start this wheatgrass business. And then you're like, hey, the wheatgrass business doesn't go anymore. I'm going to, like, get out of the wheatgrass business. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm going to go to Patagonia.
Sure.
You're chasing your dreams. You're following your heart. You're listening to God during those moments. You're doing it. And it's
maybe,
the people. It's the people who don't follow those dreams.
You need to be conscious of it. That's
right.
Okay, sure.
But it's the people who don't follow those dreams are the people who aren't serving God. Because if God says you start a wheatgrass business and you go,
okay,
I'm afraid, I can't do it. What if it doesn't make money? What
if
I can't? What if
you feel it?
What
you
if
feel
into
it.
The world? And
you
the next thing
it.
You know, you give up. You no, I can't do it. And God goes, well, you should have started the wheatgrass business. Because if you started the wheatgrass business, I'd have put you on the path to Patagonia.
Sure.
You'd have met a wife. You'd have had some kids. But your dumbass didn't fucking listen. But instead, you've listened to God. You've followed your heart your entire life that I've known you. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it is to me. That's the listening to the positive thought saying you should do this. And you're like, you know, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? It's all of what society does to us and what church does to us and what people tell us that we give those people some authority that they don't deserve. So that way when they point the finger at us and say you're not good enough, you believe that dumb shit. You know what I'm saying? In my opinion,
sure,
I don't give a fuck what someone has to say to me.
Sure.
If they're like, you're not good enough, I'm like, bro, I've already been telling myself that, but thanks.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because I got shit to do, bro. I got to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time to worry about what you think ever.
I love that.
You know what
I
mean?
Love that. Yeah.
And so because I'm following God.
Right.
And somebody might be like, oh, you don't seem like that very Christian of a person, or you don't whatever. I'd be like, yeah, I don't like to touch little kids, and I think that my girl can be the leader of my household if that's okay.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't, I don't have to be I'm the man and she's going to be subservient. Like, that's some bull-ass shit. You know what I mean? Like, you love everybody. If you don't love everybody, then just get out of here with it. You know what I'm saying? Don't come at me and be like, I'm a Christian, and then at the same time say that Joel Osteen be like, well, these people can't sleep in on the pews in our thing during the great flood of Houston or whatever. The fuck is wrong with you? Every single person who went to that church should have stopped. And if they didn't, they're not doing it for God. I'm sorry, but you're there for a social, political, like, status symbol. Dude, so this part, hold on, I got to read this out. This part where you said, I wanted to relate with the rest of the world and not just see it on the internet. That's like the best sentence of fucking all time.
I love that sentence. Yeah.
Dude.
Thank you.
I have to read it again. I wanted to relate with the rest of the world and not just see it on the internet. More people need to live that fucking lifestyle, bro.
Well,
like,
well, start with walking Patagonia, and then you can get, then you can go to the next one.
And in the next one, the Legend of Hare Mountain. Legend of Hare Mountain is a place that Thomas and Caspian grew up at. Like, you've been there so much
that's
why it's so mundane to you to be there, is because it's like, dude, there's nothing cool. Like, if I'm going to be here, let me see if there's something cool. Let me see if there's a dead skull somewhere or something just weird.
The only cool thing Thomas or Caspian or Paul could see is a bear. Like, they've seen the little house up there, the rock wall. Every tree is the same as the Ozarks. You go off, there's thorns in the bushes everywhere. So, yes, that is the story of them going camping on Hare Mountain.
And I feel you are wanting to see a bear, dude. I've been around the woods so much, and I've never seen a bobcat. I've seen a bear.
You've seen
a bear?
Okay.
I've never seen a bobcat, man. The bear I saw was fleeting. I was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
My dad wakes me up. Hey, there's some bear. I was like, what was that? Oh, dark spot through the woods. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. Looked like a fucking turkey from a distance because I didn't have my glasses on. But hey, I'll take it.
I saw the fucking same thing, and Caspian and Jasper still give me shit over it. They still hard refuse to believe.
Like this story. Like this story Caspian saw, it's very hard to believe.
Oh, no.
Go ahead, Luther. Go ahead.
It's a very similar story. It's on Hare Mountain. And,
on Hare Mountain?
It was on Hare Mountain.
That's where it happened?
It was on Hare Mountain. And Caspian and another friend, Jasper, and I had been camping, and we had left our campsite, just kind of gone separate ways. I can't remember for what. And then I remember I'd come back to the camp. I'd walk back to the campsite. I think I just took a piss. And what did I see in the distance is a black bear. He's like, he's on four legs. Mm-hmm. And then when I see him, he stands up, but only see his back.
Yeah.
And then I freak out. Like, what the fuck? So then I just take off and go the other direction.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for Caspian and Jasper. And eventually I find him. Like, hey, guys, I fucking saw a bear. But I think they were off doing something. And they thought that I was just trying to give them a story, you know, as
in
something, you know, hey, you guys were there.
Story from
Hare
Mountain.
Right, like, also, like, you guys weren't there. I was there.
Big fish
this
stories.
Is yeah, exactly. Big fish story.
Right? Just a legend from Hare Mountain.
Just
seeing a bear.
Sure.
I wanted that
about.
Same legend.
Just something to talk about.
I wanted
and
it. Thomas wanted that same legend.
For fucking, what was that, like 15, 16 years ago? To this day, they still give me shit over that story, but I would give them shit.
Like, I see a bear.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
If I didn't see it and they did, and they claimed they did, I'd be like, yeah. Was that really? Even to this day, because of how hard it is for them to believe, to this day, when I go to sleep sometimes, I think about it, I'm like, was that really a bear that I saw? But I still tell myself it had to have been. What the fuck else could it have been? I mean,
I don't
saw
believe him.
Something.
I don't believe it.
Okay, there's three possibilities.
Drugs.
I really don't. No,
drugs involved.
Three possibilities. It was a bear. It was a man in a bear suit, or it was Bigfoot.
Or drugs involved.
So I mean, one of those three.
There was not.
It was one of those three. So I mean, if you don't want to say it was a man in a bear suit, or it was Bigfoot, you must conclude it was a bear. So that is my conclusion. It has to have been a bear.
And I know that
if
he says,
if you want to disbelieve that, then you have to say it. Then it was either a man. It was either a man
anything?
In a bear suit or is Bigfoot.
You're just lying.
So there was no lie. I did see something. So we're establishing that. So the fact that I saw something
okay.
is
like
not a
elementary,
lie.
Dear Watson.
Okay.
I deduce that it is definitely a bear.
Given that I saw something,
mm-hmm.
it must have been one of those three things.
Okay.
So if you deny that it was a bear, then you're saying I saw Bigfoot. Or you're saying
sure.
I saw a man in a bear suit.
Sure.
So,
okay.
That's it.
And Thomas would agree with you probably hearing this story. Because, yeah, it probably is. I mean, if you're really going to go to it, it probably is hard to say that you didn't see something. I mean, you went up to Hare Mountain and we had left some food out. Like, we kind of wanted to see a bear, right? And so it would be hard to believe you didn't see something. But yeah.
I mean, yeah, it could have been a man
like
in a bear suit just trying to fuck with us. Yeah.
Because I
want to
believe
that.
It was something else.
Possibly.
I want to believe it was something else because I'm so jealous, and so is Thomas, that Thomas wants that bear. And so Thomas, you know, he'll do anything for it, and he will fight for God even, screaming for the bear. But I'm not sure if you or anyone really want the bear.
You go hike Ozark Highlands Trail by yourself and you'll see a bear.
You'll
well,
see it.
Well, I've hiked a lot.
It'd be the last thing you ever saw.
We were hiking and we saw this guy from California, and he said that the night before he was sleeping by himself, like he came from California by himself to hike the Ozark Highlands Trail, and he was camping by himself, and he had a bear come out around his tent all night long. He was like shining the light, waking up in the middle of the night trying to keep the bear back because it would just come up smelling around, and he'd like wake up and be like right on the other side.
It's like everyone sees that, you know, they've seen it.
Dude.
Everyone says they've seen it, right?
White
so
Rock Mountain,
Thomas.
Dude. White Rock Mountain. Like, we hung our hammocks on the post that said, beware of the bears.
Yeah, put your hammocks up here.
Right. Yeah.
Put your
right.
food
well,
on
so
the
it seems
on
like
yeah.
everyone's
yeah.
seen it but Thomas,
yeah.
and he's ready to see it.
Show me the bear.
The bear will only reveal himself to those who believe.
Looking up at God. Show me the bear!
Mm-hmm. And it was a fun story. It was a fun, fun story, I guess.
Oh, you want to try to record it into audiobook, too?
I do. Not today.
Yeah, of course. We're running out of time. It was stressful, too, not having my program up and going, but we'll have it all on the next one.
But yeah, so it's only available on an ebook because I started writing it last week, and it was pretty easy to publish though, and it's there. The price is 3, 2, 1. That's a metaphor too. So if it's worth it, you can get it.
3, 2, 1, blast off.
3, 2, 1.
And I'll post a link and stuff with it too.
All right. Cool.
So is that it, boys? Y'all done?
I think so. Yeah, it's time. Five. All right. Yeah.
I wish I could have contributed more. I don't think
this. No, you guys did great, man. Like, I appreciate you for coming, and we'll definitely have another one.
Of course.